Okay, let's see. Well, man, how long has it been since I've seen you?
I've just dropped my phone. I don't even know where it's gone. Oh, there it is. It hasn't been that long because I saw you at Worlds in Budapest. So about six, 7 months.
But less than before.
Yeah, definitely. You know, once you stop diving, I think your last event was World Cup in Shanghai. Wuhan.
Wuhan. Was it Guangzhou or Wuhan?
2018.
Yeah, we were in Guangzhou for
World Champs 2019.
Yeah, 2019.
You do that?
That was the last meet. No. I didn't do 2019.
No.
I finished in 2018, and then 2019, I was like, kind of like hid, and I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna retire or not. I'm gonna just not tell anybody, and then I was like, okay, I'm done. Yeah.
So, well, probably between 2018 and then,
because you used to come train with us a lot.
A lot.
You were coming to Miami every.
It was pretty much from 2014 to 2018. That was the last time I went there before the Commonwealth Games. In Australia, I went pretty much once a year, at least, to Miami.
Twice,
a couple of times.
And it all started because when Edwin came, Edwin, your coach, Edwin Yong-Yongs.
Yep.
He was your first coach ever, right?
Yeah, he was the one that picked me out of school back in 2004 when I was 8 years old at the time.
Now, how did he pick you out of school?
So they were running a talent identification program. That was basically going into schools all around Leeds and trying to find kids that showed a bit of talent and ability for diving. So they had a few like super basic gymnastics based exercises, which they...
And you were short then?
I was like a normal sized kid, I think.
I think these chairs doesn't justify how tall you are, but...
Well, you can probably see how high my knees are coming compared to my body. I think I was a normal sized kid at that time, but I had done gymnastics previously. So I'd done like 4 years of gymnastics. So I had everything they were looking for in terms of the ability. Some like base level strength.
Yeah.
And I got picked. Edwin was running that program. So he picked me as one of the maybe 30 kids that were picked, maybe more that were picked for the next phase.
It was you, Alicia Blagg.
Alicia, yeah, she was, I think, in the same generation. And Hannah Starling.
Yeah.
In the same generation. Three of us turned out to be Olympians. So I genuinely think the most successful generation of talent identification probably ever anywhere.
And Edwin has good taste.
Clearly has good taste.
Yeah,
because, I mean, even in Leeds, like, there's not been any talent ID programs that have been as successful, and you know, he didn't run anymore, and now he's out working in Australia in Brisbane, pretty much doing the same
thing.
He's
in Australia now?
Yeah, he's moved out to Brisbane to work with AD, but he's now working with little kids again, so he's essentially running through the same process all over again. So it'll be interesting to see, the whole project's like, you know, Brisbane 2032, and the whole point is to see if he can find some divers that will be able to progress to an Olympic level for that games or for the one afterwards, or use that one as inspiration to inspire them to bring more and more on board and see how he gets on.
And so you started with Edwin when you were a kid, and how'd that snowball into now?
Well, I stayed in Leeds pretty much the whole time until 2018.
Okay.
So a solid 14 years.
Just with Edwin?
Not just with Edwin, no. I dove with a few other coaches, just, you know, within the program, because, you know, you move from group to group. For example, I was moved out of the TID group quite early.
TID?
Into a talent identification.
Okay.
I was moved out of that group quite early into like a development group, which was supposed to be slightly higher level.
Yeah.
So I was moved out quite early, went with another coach, and, you know, there were multiple coaches running the TID squad as well. It wasn't just Edwin. He was kind of overseeing the whole thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, they figured that that move was a little bit too early for me. So I actually ended up getting moved back to TID. So I was with all my friends that I had joined with. And then, you know, slowly just moved up the groups within Leeds Diving. So dove with different coaches at different phases. You know, AD as well, he was one of my coaches, but only for a really short period of time, actually. You know, I feel like he's been there for my whole career, but he's actually only directly coached me for a short period of time.
What was his last name?
Hinchliffe.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, eventually ended up back with Edwin. I can't remember what year now. I think it was somewhere around 2008. Somewhere around there. Like I must have been 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And
is that when it started getting very serious? Is that when like your diving started to pick up? When did it start to...
For me, it was always serious.
Uh-huh.
When I started, I was doing gymnastics at the same time.
Uh-huh. Like most divers?
Yeah. But it very quickly became apparent that I preferred diving to gymnastics massively. So I dropped gymnastics after a couple of months of doing both.
Wow.
And committed to diving. Mm-hmm. And naturally, diving always came first above any other sports I was doing at school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a sporty kid, right? So I enjoyed doing sports. I tried to play for like, football for school, rugby, cricket. But
typical American games.
Yeah, of course, all those American ones that you know. Sorry, soccer. but yeah, I tried to do everything. But you know, diving would always take priority over football training, for example. So if they were doing a school team football training session on a Wednesday night after school,
uh-huh.
I would never go to that because I'd go to diving training.
Yeah,
I'd never want to miss a day of diving. So it was always kind of serious, and it was a year and a half after I started that I got to go on my first international trip,
mm-hmm.
With the club representing Leeds. I went to Eindhoven in the Netherlands, and just like having that kind of opportunity, it really early on showed me what could potentially happen.
You got the first taste of
it. Also at that time, you know, when I started, like 2004, it was June 2004, so the Olympics in Athens were just after that.
Yep.
And I do remember watching some of the events. I remember seeing Leon Taylor and Peter Waterfield winning a silver medal in the 10-meter synchro.
Yeah,
and
Peter Waterfield.
Yeah.
What a guy.
I know, good diver.
Yeah.
And I literally decided there and then that I was going to be an Olympian in diving.
And this was how old?
9.
Wow. Okay.
So the Olympics was always on my radar from that point after watching it, because mm-hmm. you know, just seeing the fanfare of it, seeing the medal presentation, the celebrations and adulation going on poolside after such a successful performance, I saw that. I was like, I want to be a part of that. That's cool. That looks fun.
And then who was the first Olympian you met?
Oh, well, technically Edwin, I guess, because he had done 2 Olympics himself.
Yeah.
Never really knew at the time that was something that developed a little bit later on. I remember going to Manchester in 2005, which is not far from Leeds. They had the British National Championships there.
Mm-hmm.
So I do remember speaking to Leon Taylor there when I was really young. And I'd only been diving for about a year, even less than a year. And it was really cool to meet him, you know, watching the events, watching people like Pete still diving at the time. Tom at the age of like 10 or whatever he was, 11 at that time.
Destroying the world.
Just sick. Like ridiculous.
He was a phenom. I mean,
the guy's a joke, and
a good joke. A good joke.
Yeah, like it's just ridiculous how good he is.
Yeah,
and
that's not fair.
It really isn't. It really isn't. I remember the first time I met him. Probably, I don't know if it was before that nationals where I got to watch him, but we were at an event in Southampton,
uh-huh.
Southampton Invitational, they called it, and me and my friends like kind of going down on the bus. We knew about this Tom Daley guy, but we didn't know much about him because he was still pretty early on, right?
Yeah.
And you know, there was just like rumors swirling around, like, oh my god, you can do this dive, you can do that dive, you can do like back half 2.5 on 10 meters. He's like 11 years old, it's crazy. Whereas I'm there like still struggling to do like a reverse dive tuck on 3 meters.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
my feet are all over the place, I'm kicking my legs together.
And he must have been in the age group above me, but the first time we got into the pool, he was in the water training. So I like, kind of sat on in the balcony and just watched him diving. Just ridiculous quality.
Yeah.
Ridiculous quality. And then a little bit later on, might have been the next day or something like that, I was in the pool at the same time as him. Happened to be on 3 meter springboard at the same time as him. I was like, you're Tom Daley, right? And he's like, yeah, yeah. I was like, you can do back half 2.5 on 10 meter. And he's like, well, actually, it's back 1.5, 2.5. I was like, oh my gosh, this guy is sick.
Oh.
I was like, wow. And then obviously watched him for the rest of that weekend, and it's weird because he's only 1 year older than me, but at that time, like, instantly became an idol.
Yeah,
you know, instantly became someone that I looked up to, and aspired to be like.
Because you're same that, age and you're kind of like, okay, yeah. We're at the same level. So that's a huge, I mean, to be able to look up to someone at that same level mm-hmm. as you and not have to look up to someone that you'll never get to compete against, mm-hmm. That's a huge difference, yeah. I think.
And that's the thing, like, you know, fortunately, later on, I was able to go to a lot of internationals representing Jamaica and being alongside him. But even before that, you know, seeing him and going through events quite frequently mm-hmm. alongside someone like that, mm-hmm. you get to watch him in training every single day. You get to see the quality, see the technique. At the time, I was watching countless YouTube videos, like hours on end, sit down, just watch YouTube videos. I actually got to tell him as well last year at the Commonwealth Games, but there was this one video of Matthew Helm uh-huh. from Australia when he won his silver medal in Athens. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, this video of his diving, and you get to see the behind the scenes a little bit. And the soundtrack to it was Fly Away by Lenny Kravitz. I think uh-huh. that's the name of the song. I want to
get away.
That one. And like anytime I hear that song, even now, that video instantly comes back to me. I think Matthew Helm straight away, because I watched that video so many times.
That
song was really cool.
So when you were a kid, okay, this is a question I like to ask everybody. Mm. When you were diving, who was the first person that you saw dive that got you inspired? And then two, who was the second person that you really looked up to when you were diving that you wanted to, like, you know, you watch videos, you watch film, you're like, that's who I want to be like, that's who I aspire to be. You know, they've got the form, they've got the technique, they've got the entry.
The first has to be Leon and Pete, as I said.
Yeah.
You know, what I specifically remember seeing that event, seeing the celebration when they got their medal.
Yeah.
Seeing them getting their little, I can't remember what it was called, but whatever they got in Athens, thing.
Yeah, they put on their head.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
So it was the two of them that first got me like really inspired.
Uh-huh.
After that,
if there's more, you can throw them in there.
There's a lot of that. Like, you know, the main videos I would watch would be Laura Wilkinson from Sydney.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Like, phenomenal. The Matthew Helm video, I watched a lot of that. Probably a bit of Alex Despoti at that time as well.
He was a legend.
You know, he was class. I feel like there weren't that many videos of him on the internet though.
Mm-hmm. But what a class act.
Yeah. I don't think there was anyone that I watched directly and said, I want to be like that.
Yeah.
I would watch, you know, they do like a compilation video of the Olympic final in Athens or in Sydney or something like that.
Yeah.
And they'd show all these amazing divers doing like double out and reverse 3.5. Or even, okay. Actually, not even reverse 3.5 at that time, probably more like reverse 2.5 pike,
yeah.
Back 2.5 pike, front 3.5 pike,
yep.
Quality execution. I sit and watch and think, I want to do those dives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine if I could do those dives, that'd be so cool.
And being at your height, you're what, 6'3?
Yeah.
6'4?
6'3.
Trying to do those dives, that's
yeah.
An inward 2.5 pike on 1 meter.
Well, I mean, obviously,
you gotta finish.
At that time, I didn't know I was gonna be that tall, right?
yeah.
But, you know, I'd watch it, and I think that's why a number of different athletes kind of come to my brain, not one in particular, because I'd watch and I'd say, I'd wanna do that dive. And I'd actually see the different techniques as well, like the different ways of going about the dives.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like as I was progressing and developing in diving, it was a case of just mix and matching and putting little things together. I think one major influence on me actually a little bit later on was Patrick Housding.
Yeah.
You know, I studied his hurdle.
Yeah.
And I tried to replicate his hurdle. He's probably the main one that I tried to replicate.
Yeah, okay.
Because when I started doing the hop hurdle, I watched his and it just was so proficient.
Yep.
He was able to take off from any position on the board.
Any
position, but that's because he got such good board timing.
Yeah.
Or even when he didn't get good board timing, he created so much board movement that he just had to work with the board and it would help him.
Yeah.
And I studied that and I tried to replicate my hurdle and make it look like that as much as possible.
Because he was so powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was an animal. Taking Gainer 3.5 pike off, the worst insane. Hurdle you've ever seen. Yeah. Like, dude.
Unreal.
How are you doing this?
Unreal.
It was scary. He looks so serious, but man, what a funny guy.
Yeah.
What a funny guy. Yeah.
And then again, like, to be able to share a diving event with some of these people that I watched on videos for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Standing on the pool deck or standing on the boards, mm-hmm. warming up, and you're like, that's him.
Yeah.
That's the guy. That's actually, I've been looking at him for forever.
I do remember a moment, and it was probably with Alex Desparti actually, a camo okay. event in Montreal. It must have been my first one in 2009. And I seen, I think it was Alex Desparti, Javier Iana from Spain.
Uh-huh. Mickey Benedetti.
Mickey Benedetti.
Yeah, he was Italy. All. That was kind of their squad.
Three of them. I think there was one more as well. I can't remember, but I remember seeing
Arturo.
Possibly Arturo.
Yeah.
2009. I don't know if he's still being diamond at that point.
No.
So his last one was Beijing, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's still diamond at that point.
Maybe like Ruben Ross, right? Because he was doing. Yeah. He might have been sinker with Ruben then.
Possibly. Yeah, you might be right. I feel like Ruben Ross wasn't as standout as those three, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember seeing them, and like Jenna Bell as well at that time.
Yeah.
And just being around them and just being so intimidated.
Yeah.
I was like,
oh, it took me, these people?
Took me years to even speak to Jennifer Bell.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why?
I was so scared of her. She's so intimidating. Like, she's such a good diver.
Yeah. But,
you know, because she's black.
Yeah.
She's one that I could really relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found that really intimidating. I was just scared to
really?
Speak to her. Yeah, yeah.
You'd think that'd make you feel more comfortable,
no,
right?
Nope, opposite.
It was like, oh no, I can't talk to you.
No, it literally took until Glasgow Commonwealth Games 2014. My mum was working as like a volunteer on the desk. So when athletes would walk in, like we'd scan our pass, and my mum was working at the front desk where all the information is or whatever. And my mum talks to everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's not scared. So she spoke to Jen at some point, and Jen must have said like, oh, Yona never speaks to me. And my mum literally told her to just come up to me and speak to me.
Oh, so she told Jen to come talk to you.
So Jen eventually came to me.
She knew you were nervous?
Yeah, exactly. She came to me, and then ever since then, we were cool.
Oh, that's funny.
Really cool. So yeah, it took a good 5 years.
5 years to talk to someone, jeez. Man.
Yeah. But yeah, and so there's a bunch of divers that really inspired me from a young age, mainly from watching them on videos on YouTube, mm-hmm. just hours on end, probably when I was supposed to be doing homework. But,
so you grew up in Leeds.
Yep.
But yet you represent Jamaica. Explain that.
Yeah, so.
How does that all work?
Grew up
you have
in
a
Leeds.
British accent.
I have a British accent. My mum moved to the UK from Barbados.
Okay.
My dad moved to the UK from Jamaica.
Okay.
Years and years before I was born.
Got it.
They met in the UK, eventually had me. Obviously, you know, when I got into diving,
mm-hmm.
again, watching Athens 2004, my whole intention was to represent Great Britain.
Okay.
You know, that's all I wanted to go to the Olympics. There was never a question of representing another country other than
really?
Great Britain. No, because, I mean, I didn't really that's consider right. anything else. Yeah. Yeah, I was in the British system.
Yep. But you had dual passports?
Not at the time.
No, okay.
Not at the time, no. I didn't have a British passport at the time. You know, my friends would be on the British camps. I'd be trying to get onto the programs so I could join them on the camps. Always get left behind or felt like I was getting left behind because they were always going away on their little camps and having so much fun, coming back with stories. I'd be like, oh, that sounds great. I wish I was there.
Who were these divers?
Like Jack Law, Freddie Woodward, uh-huh. Jack Haslam, Josh Dowd.
Chris Mears?
I didn't really know him at the time because okay. he was from Southampton
okay.
at the time, so I didn't really know him. These were like the northern locals. Group,
got it.
But also my age group. So we had one of the best age groups ever in British diving history. Like the quality of it was phenomenal, which was also another reason that kind of pushed me to make the decision eventually to represent Jamaica, because I could never make it onto these camps. Obviously I went through like a growth spurt and my form wasn't particularly great. I had a good rip, but
why'd you look at your feet?
Because my feet were awful. You know, I once got we were doing like testing for one of the regional camps, which I wasn't on a national program, just a regional one, and we do some testing. They're testing flexibility, and the toe point one is like you point your toes as much as possible, and based on the number of centimeters off the ground, that's how many points you get. So if it's like 1 centimeter off the ground,
1 point.
You get 9 points out of 10.
Oh, okay.
Right? So then if you get to 10 centimeters, you get zero. Anything above 10 centimeters, you get minus. I got 13 centimeters.
So minus 13?
Minus three.
Minus three,
yeah. which was heavily embarrassing.
Oh.
But yeah, I was a scruffy diver. You know, I wasn't particularly good. I was, I guess, I had ability because of my gymnastics background. I had a good like awareness, good feel of my body.
Yeah.
But like, I couldn't execute as well as some of the other divers could execute. It didn't look as good as some of the other divers did. Mm-hmm. Like Freddie at the time, phenomenal form. Jack Haslam, Jack Law, obviously another freak of nature like Tom.
Yeah.
In certain ways. So they, you know, I never made it onto any teams. Even, you know, I'd be competitive at the Junior Elite Nationals. I'd be, you know, fourth, third, somewhere around there, but you got to make top two to make it onto an international team.
Yeah.
And I was never quite there because it would always be Jack, Law, and then like one of Freddie or Jack or Josh.
Yeah.
Or someone else, but like never quite me. Mm-hmm. I never could quite deliver to get into that bracket. And then, you know, after a little while of frustration, there was a period where I didn't make it onto a program which I thought I was going to make it onto, and I had a meeting with Edwin. And in that meeting, Edwin suggested looking at representing Jamaica or Barbados. And this was in 2010, I think it was at the time. So I was about 15.
Okay.
So I was going through my growth spurt, struggling with Oscar Schlatter's disease in my knees.
Yeah.
So my training was like, I could train, but you know, spurt. I had to have to get out like 10 minutes early, 15 minutes early, every single session to ice. And you know, generally during that, those 15 minutes sat on poolside watching my friends train. So frustrating because I'd be genuinely jealous, and you know, when they go away on competitions and things like that for Great Britain, I'd genuinely be jealous, but my jealousy was like a fire,
yeah,
which made me want to work harder to join them. Mm-hmm. Not a jealousy to be spiteful or to give up.
Yeah,
it always fueled me to do more to eventually join them.
It was nothing against them.
No, yeah, not at all. I was just jealous because it looked like they were having so much fun. Yeah. And I wanted to be a part of that because mm-hmm. I enjoyed doing the diving, but I enjoyed being with them. And that's what, you know, as you know, when you go to competitions, that's what really makes it, is the people that you're around. So Edwin made the suggestion to represent Jamaica, probably just kind of considered it very briefly, but I was like, no, I don't want to do that because I feel like that's, you know, I want to earn my spot.
Yeah.
I want to earn it. I want to deserve it. You know, yeah. I want to compete for it. I want to do it for Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it must have been like the year afterwards, or you know, like 6 months after that meeting. And I went to a Junior Elite Nationals in Southampton, and I finished second on 1 meter. I had a decent 3 meter. I think I finished fourth, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they again didn't pick me for, I think it was Junior Europeans at that time. And after they didn't pick me, I was like, okay, all right.
I'm tired
now of is the time. I've got to do this. So I started looking into Jamaica. I think I briefly looked into Barbados, but from the start, Jamaica was a no-brainer.
How come?
Just the status of this country,
yeah,
as a sporting nation,
yeah,
because of track and field. Standout. Back in 2008, I remember being in Barbados watching the Olympics, seeing Usain Bolt do his like celebration 20 meters early and still win,
yeah,
with the world record,
yeah,
or Olympic record, the way it was. I watched that, I was like, that guy's sick. Like, that is so cool. Idol, straight
yep.
away.
Yep.
So when the suggestion was made, just naturally lent towards Jamaica because of people like him. What Edwin told me a couple of years after that, or a few years after that, I can't remember when it was that he told me, was that my name was actually considered as a diver to be selected for that Junior Europeans
mm-hmm.
in their selection meeting. But Edwin said no.
Edwin said no.
Yeah, because he wanted me to go down the Jamaica route, and he knew that if I represented Great Britain, I'd then have to wait a year or whatever if I wanted to eventually switch, or it might make me want to commit to Great Britain and lose the Jamaica opportunity.
Ah.
So I'm pretty sure he told me this. I'm pretty sure I haven't made this up, but he said no when they considered my name. Because he wanted me to go for Jamaica.
And wow.
Then that's actually what...
That's what started it.
...made me make the decision. How long
did that process take?
It was like 8 months or so, I think, to kind of speak to the Aquatic Sports Association of Jamaica, mm-hmm. as it's called. You know, get my membership with them, apply for my passport, get my citizenship. Had some difficulties with like my dad's birth certificate, and you know, he had to get a passport actually because he didn't even have a Jamaican passport at the time.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think he just had a British passport, so he had to get one, but there was some issues with his middle name and the spelling of it compared to his birth certificate and his passport, so there's a few complications which we had to deal with for him first, and then I was able to get mine. So the whole process maybe took about 8 months. So I ended up getting my passport in like maybe January 2012. Mm-hmm. I think I initially made the application mid 2011.
So you switched to a Jamaican, not citizenship. You're Jamaican citizen.
Yep.
Now, do you think that opened doors and windows in terms of experience for you to gain in the diving realm?
Yeah, 100%. I mean,
do you think that it sort of became an advantage in a sense?
Yeah, all the competitions I've done over the years, there's no way I would have done them with Great Britain.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, the way that things actually shaped out, I may well have been one of the competitors for the second individual spot in Rio. Mm-hmm. Because Chris was focusing on synchro. Jack was pretty much pre-selected for synchro and individual. Mm-hmm. And then the second spot came down to like Freddie. Oliver Dingley had chosen to represent Ireland.
Yep.
So he was out of it. James Heatley was still a bit young at that time. Mm-hmm. And Jack Haslam was struggling with injuries. So it was, you know, pretty much Freddie, and he was a front runner. And me and Freddie were always very, very competitive over the years.
What a funny guy.
I miss that guy so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, honestly, he's one of my favorite people.
I'm like watching that man dance.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. But yeah, it might well have come down to the two of us kind of find out.
That would have been cool.
But that's assuming I would have progressed to the level that I got to.
Yeah, yeah.
And had I been representing Great Britain, I wouldn't have been able to do all the World Championships, mm-hmm. World Cups, Commonwealth Games in 2014.
You wouldn't have any of that experience.
Grand Prix, wouldn't have done any of those. I might have just had Nationals. So that international experience for me was what helped me reach the Olympic level.
Yeah.
And representing Jamaica opened that door because, you know, I wasn't competing against anyone to get those spots to go to those events. I just had to get the funding essentially.
Yeah.
Very, very fortunately, I was able to get a sponsor right at the start who still looks after me now, Levi Roots.
Okay.
He's a,
thank you, Levi.
Thank you very much, Levi. he is a businessman. He's based in the UK. He's Jamaican. Mm-hmm. And he's basically funded all my travel and accommodation since 2012.
Wow.
So all the Grand Prix, the World Championships that I've done, there's been a bit of FINA support in there. There's been a bit of support from the JOA as well for events like
JOA.
The Jamaican Olympic Association.
Okay.
You know, they would provide the funding for like the Commonwealth Games or the Pan Am Games, things like that. But for all the Grand Prix, every time I went to Fort Lauderdale or Canada or anywhere else, it was always Levi's money.
Wow.
And without that, you know, I wouldn't have been able to gain the experience. So that was hugely fortunate timing.
Yeah.
To get that. And, you know, every positive and negative result that came with those events was all just learning. I always wanted to do well, but I wasn't worried about the outcome of the events. Mm-hmm. I was only focused on just doing it and learning from how it felt and trying to make an adjustment, make a change for the next time, see if I could do better.
Minimizing your mistakes, kind of like golf.
Yeah, pretty much. And that was the process slowly all the way through to 2016. And, you know, me and Edwin had made a plan in 2012 to think about all the events that needs to do. You know, we're trying to upgrade the dives as well. So in 2015 at World Championships in Kazan, I used reverse 3.5 on 3 meter. I used reverse 3.5 twister, mm-hmm. but reverse twister was all right. Reverse 3.5 did not go well. But after that, we made the decision to say, right, let's just leave those. Let's do pike list, front pike, inward pike, back pike, reverse pike, full out, double out. Dives that you can trust, dives that you can rely on.
Consistency.
So that when you're in the heat of the moment in that prelim at the World Cup under pressure, you've got six dives that you know you can land on your head on. Mm-hmm. And if you can land on your head and hopefully rip a couple, then the judges will go with you, and that should be enough to get about 400 points.
Talk me through the World Cup.
What an experience, man.
Talk about... I was nervous, man. Because you'd been coming to Miami, and you'd been training.
Yeah.
For you'd come stay with me for, what, a couple weeks at a time? Yep. You'd come stay with me when I wasn't even there.
Yep.
Another funny story we'll have to tell.
And, you know, those trips out to Miami were... Well, obviously with Rio being outdoor,
yeah,
the main goal was to try and gain as much outdoor experience as possible between 2012 and 2016. So that's why Puerto Rico was super important.
Yep.
Because the conditions at that pool were horrendous. I hated diving there so much, but I learned so much from controlling myself in those conditions. And then being able to go out and train in Miami because it's outdoor.
And our pool's not great.
No, the pool's not easy to dive in. You know,
no.
You remember I always used the 3 meter springboard on the individual stand, right? Because the 3 meters under the 7 meter. I was too scared of touching the 7 meter because at that time I was quite strong. I could jump quite high. And I was like, I don't want to take that risk.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use the outside board, which no one used.
You know, Bree Adams hit that platform.
Yes, on the reverse twist. Yeah, I know. I've seen, I think there's a video of it.
Yeah.
I've seen that. And, you know, I made that decision way beforehand anyway. And, you know, it's challenging. I felt if I could do my dives in Miami, I can do them anywhere.
Yeah.
If I can do my dives in Puerto Rico, I can do it anywhere. So I actually went to Miami on my pre-camp before World Cup.
Yep.
Had a very nice time on the beach. And just chilling and in the sun. And actually, well, to go back a couple of months after Kazan, you know, me and Edmund had our meeting, decided that we're going to go for the pike list. And another thing, probably the best piece of advice I've ever received from anyone was that he said, we want to make sure that when we get to the World Cup after the event, we can look back and have no regrets. And that is for my decisions in the pool and my decisions out of the pool as well.
Yep.
So I changed my whole lifestyle, eating as best as possible. Wasn't getting any advice, but it was pretty clear, like, just eat more vegetables, eat more good things, don't eat as many bad things.
You didn't buy boxes of cereal anymore like you used to.
Yeah, exactly. I used to bring, like, what was one of those?
Lucky Charms.
Obsessed by them. Obsessed. Always bring them back. Terrible. So I stopped doing that. I stopped drinking.
You got addicted to Jif. You were addicted to Jif after coming to the U.S., which I tried to bring you on this trip. I had a huge jar of Jif. I mean, it was massive. And I was like, oh, man, I'm going to pull it out during this podcast, and I'm going to put it right there, and you're going to be all happy. And they took it right at security.
That would have made my day.
I know.
So I changed those things. I stopped drinking for that period of time. Stopped going out because, you know, the late nights, that's not helpful.
Yep.
I was in my third year at uni as well, so I was a university student.
Yeah.
So it was a step to take myself away from the university lifestyle.
That's hard to balance.
It's tough. Fortunately, I studied sports science, which is pretty easy. I found a really nice balance. I found a really nice flow. I felt like every single decision I was making was considered based on whether it's going to benefit me or whether it's not going to benefit me. Even things where I could potentially go somewhere and do something that was fun, but it's not beneficial for my training.
Mm-hmm.
Happy to leave it to one side for now because Rio's priority.
You're sacrificing a lot.
Big time. And I said it to my cousin as well, one of my cousins in London. Like, for me, I don't know why I looked at it this way, but I literally said to him, failure is not an option. And for me, failure was not making the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
I said to him, failure is not an option. I feel like that might have put pressure on me to think about it that way, but it made me work hard.
Yeah.
It made me stay so committed, so focused.
Mm-hmm.
Comes around to the training camp in Miami, just felt good. Like, I went to a event in Camo in the December 2015 using my pike list. Went to US Nationals, same thing, using my pike list. Diving really well in those events. Started to feel such a nice little flow. British Nationals, same thing, just flowing so nice. And it was just about continuing and carrying on that momentum, making sure that everything else I was doing was just focused in towards diving. And got to Miami, felt so good. And then one day I got in the hot tub because it was February at the time, so it was a bit cold in Miami.
Yeah, yeah.
So you use the hot tub.
Cold.
Yeah, yeah. Chilly.
If you're not, if you're not, yeah, if you're not diving, oh, yeah. It's a beautiful day.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. But yeah. To be in water, outdoor, a bit chilly sometimes. So you utilize the hot tub.
Yeah.
I got in and I like sliced my foot open on like one of the grates or whatever the drains in the hot tub.
I don't remember this.
You went there because you were on your training camp.
We were in Joao Pessoa.
Exactly.
Is this when? You stayed at my house and I wasn't there?
One of the many times I've done that.
Is this the one where you showed up?
No, that was before the Olympics.
Oh, okay, okay.
Because I was only there for 3 days.
Okay.
And in those 3 days, I moved house for you with your housemates.
I showed up, yeah, yeah, yeah. Where was I?
Again, is you're in Brazil. Job, so, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well,
training camp.
Yeah, I was in Brazil and
yep.
I forgot to tell you that I wasn't going to be there. And then my roommates were moving all of my stuff from the new house. And then you showed up at my house and my roommates were like, what are you doing here?
Yep.
But it happens. Well,
yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Normal. but anyway, yeah, no, so you went there. I got in, sliced my foot, bleeding a lot. Went to, I think, the medical center and got it like all bandaged up.
Uh-huh.
So, okay, take it easy the next day because... I think it was, I had like one more day of training and then I was flying the next day down to Rio.
Yeah.
It's like, this is brilliant. Like sliced my foot open just before the biggest competition in my life. Then the next day I was like, okay, I'll take it easy. I'll just do some standing dives. Don't want to do any hurdle, put some pressure through it or anything like that. Hit my foot on the board. I'm standing front to that 5.1 meter. Same foot. I was like, ah, brilliant. Is this how this is going, right?
Yeah.
Literally everything's going.
Yeah.
Fly to Rio the following day. I think in the airport, they wanted to like, they were offering me a hotel for the night to delay my journey for the next day because they were so overbooked. So I was like, nah, I literally need to get there because
yeah, it's kind of important,
right? Get there, no suitcase for like 2 days. And at the time, the Zika virus was a thing, right?
So
I had my mosquito repellent in my suitcase. So day one, no mosquito repellent, got bitten 4 times on the same shoulder by a mosquito. I was like, right, that's it. Guaranteed
I'm done,
to get
I'm
Zika.
Done.
It has to happen. Fortunately, didn't get Zika. Unfortunately, got my suitcase a couple of days later. At this time, writing my dissertation for uni as well.
During this?
Yeah, I was writing my dissertation at the time, so.
You couldn't ask him to like, hey, I need a little bit. I'm a little busy.
Well, no, because I've always enjoyed having the balance of something outside of diving to do. To, you know, when I finish a training session, I love having to go and do something else.
Okay.
Rather than just going back home and doing nothing to dwell on the session that I've just had, whether positive or negative. If it's negative, I'm like, oh my God, I'm a terrible diver. And it just snowballs.
Mm-hmm.
If it's positive, then I might get a bit too excited mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. get humbled the next day. But going straight into something else, which is why I coach now. I love finishing training and just going straight into coaching because the coaching is not about me. So regardless of my training session, leave it to one side and I've got to be there and deliver a coaching session for the kids because mm-hmm. it's their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always enjoyed having something on the outside. That time in Rio, you know, jet lag, not great. Literally like woke up in the middle of the night, wide awake at like 2 a.m. So like, just start working on my dissertation. So they're like an hour and a half working on my dissertation in the night and then went back to sleep. First day at the pool, Catherine Torrance, who I trained with mm-hmm. in Leeds and was hoping to qualify for the Olympics, reversing off pike, smacks her arm on the board. And like, I can't remember if she broke a bone or something, but basically was unable to then
I didn't
compete.
Know this.
Yeah, she never ended up competing there because she hit her arm on the board. So
wow.
Hard. So literally that's the first thing that I saw. No, I saw two things. I saw someone get lost on in with 3.5. On 10 meter, and I saw her hit her hand on the board. Literally, the first two things I saw at the pool, I was like, this is just brilliant. Like,
you're just racking in the bad luck.
Everything is going on. I was in a different hotel to the Brits, so.
Oh, geez.
So there's two separate hotels. So, like, every night I would get the bus back from the pool to their hotel and go hang out with them, and then get an Uber from their hotel to my hotel.
Oh, geez.
Pretty much every night. And. You know, I mainly wanted to do that, so I just wasn't on my own each night, just letting the thoughts stew and build. And, you know, competition day came around. At that point, I was ready for anything, man. Like, I had done all the prep in terms of diving outdoor. I was ready for any condition. I actually wanted bad conditions. Mm-hmm. So I felt that I was ready to deal with the worst conditions, but I didn't think that anyone else was. I thought that would benefit me.
Yeah.
I came in, it was a bit overcast.
Yeah.
It was humid-ish. It was a little bit wavy on the water. Not too bad though, not too windy.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like indoor. It felt indoor. I felt so comfortable. It was crazy on that prelim. I felt so comfortable.
But that's because you were training so much outside.
Yeah.
You spent so much time in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but everybody else was not comfortable with it there because there were so many people mm-hmm. just windshield wipers yeah. left and right on the yeah. water because they didn't train outside. And yeah. a lot of the big countries that were really good struggled.
Yep. I felt so comfortable. It was bizarre. And Edwin had set me a target of 400 points. He thought that'd be enough to make it into the semifinal.
Mm-hmm.
I scored 397 in the prelim. I made it into the semifinal by 6 points.
I remember you squeaking by. Because we were losing our minds waiting. I'm sitting there waiting. I'm like, okay. And I lost it. I absolutely lost it.
Yeah, clutch. Front 3.5 pike to finish.
Uh-huh.
I think I must have gone like 71 points, something like that. That got me in.
And that was the semifinal to qualify for the final.
That was in the prelim to qualify for the semi.
And then you had to get top.
So top 12, but like my spot was confirmed after, because it was at that time, that event where it was just top 18. So that's when one performance.
That was the pure panic moment then. Because I was panicking. I was like, oh my God, is he going to make it?
It was that one performance.
Yeah.
It was at that time, I wasn't following results. I wasn't looking at my scores. I was trying to literally get out of the water and ignore everything as much as possible, get to my headphones as quickly as possible. Until my last dive, where I'd do my dive and I'd swim in and I'd look at the scoreboard. And I can't remember where in the start order I was, but I looked at the scoreboard and I seen the score and I seen, I think, my whatever position. And I went over to Edwin, and I looked at Edwin and he's like, that's enough, that's all right. And like, lost it immediately.
I remember, man.
Like, Jack came down from the stands. Chris and Freddie were both competing. I think Freddie also finished 18th, so he just snuck in.
Yeah, I remember standing right there.
And oh man, there's some awesome pictures. Just, yeah, incredible moment.
Yeah.
Incredible moment.
Nothing feels better. Spend that with your friends too.
Yeah, literally. You know, all the people that have been training with me the whole time, obviously Chris had since moved up, I think in 2012, 2013 to lead. So he was with me throughout that whole process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Freddie, someone that I've been so close to all those years. And again, we were just right next to each other.
Yep.
Yeah, phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
But then?
Then, pff, who knows what happened, man.
Yeah, you blacked out.
Yeah, obviously like, it was the next day. We went in for the semi-final. Just had a really good event.
Uh-huh.
I think I got a personal best, it was like 4:27 uh-huh. at that time. Did an incredible reverse snow pike, like 76 points.
I remember that.
I posted the video not too long ago, and I actually came up and I got a bad hurdle, so I was like complaining at the board. After I'd done my best ever diving competition ever.
You're complaining.
Like, what am I doing? Like, who is this guy? And then, finished 11th in the semi-final and stuck into the final. At that time, I think Chao Yuan had already been knocked out. I don't think he made it into the semi-final.
Uh-huh.
He dropped a triple out really badly.
That's when everybody was just chunking.
So bad. Edwin had made dinner plans that evening because he didn't think I was going to make the final. So he had to cancel my dinner plans. I was like, you just go to dinner, man. I'll get like Jack to coach me or something. Like, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, he canceled his dinner plans, regretfully. the funny thing is, after the semi, there was only like an hour and a half break or something like that until the final started.
Uh-huh.
So I went across the road. There was a Subway, like a 6-inch Subway. And just like literally chilling, eating with Edwin, just chatting, whatever. Like, I probably should go back to the pool and see what time the final started.
So casual. Back,
and like, there was 20 minutes left of training. I was like, I probably should get in and do some dives.
After pounding a 6-inch?
Yeah. So I literally like, still feeding my belly, got in the water, did a set of requireds, best set of requireds I've ever done in my life. Literally just went in up right outside. It was all right. Competition started and it's funny because I say I blacked out, but I actually remember so much of it.
Okay, talk me through your dive.
Opened on full out, and you know, my full out is a good dive, and it just was spot on. So felt fine.
It's good to start with.
I just got really, I just got a really good end for me. And that's one of my strengths around my entry, which is why a pilot list was strong for me. So just got a good end, but it was maybe slightly better than normal. So the judges went with it, maybe like eight and a halfs.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the half pike. Again, just felt like an average start, but got a really nice sequence on the bottom. I think they went with me and gave me like 8.5 nines
mm-hmm.
on that. Double out at that time was my tricky dive, but just got a nice pickup, held decent form all the way around, which was unusual for me, and got really good hands. Which got me 83 points.
And that was when people started kind of...
That's when people started clicking on.
Yeah.
But also at that point...
people started making mistakes.
Yeah.
And I was like, and in the crowd, we're all sitting there like, oh my gosh, Yona. Oh, you did your first dive. I'm like, okay, that's a good start. That's a good start. Second dive, we're like, okay, okay. Third dive, and we're like, holy crap. He's doing really good. And you could feel when we're sitting in the crowd, you can feel everybody getting a little bit louder. And a little bit louder when you started to go. And like, I'm kind of watching everybody else. I'm like, holy crap, they're getting louder.
And well, as I say, I wasn't following the results. I wasn't following my scores. I was trying to ignore it as much as possible. So I had no idea how everyone else was diving. I just knew I was diving really well. I knew I had opened up really, really well.
Uh-huh.
And because I was start number two, because I finished 11th in the semi, I was waiting on the stairs and I think it was Cesar Castro was the first diver.
Mm-hmm.
And at the halfway stage, the announcer was like, kind of running through the rankings. He was like, in first place at the moment, is whoever. Second place is probably Romel.
Mm-hmm.
In second place, whoever. And I heard him say, in third place, it's great to see the Jamaican diver, Young Knight Wisdom, up there. And I literally, I was stood there like with my fingers in my ears. When he started running through it, I put my fingers in my ears so I didn't want to hear it, but I could still hear it.
Oh.
It was so loud. I heard it, I was like, okay, sick. My next time was real. In 2.5 pike. And at that time, I was starting to get a bit of cramp in my calves.
Uh-huh.
And that was my next shaky dive.
Did you panic?
Not really. Mine was fine. I think I got eights, like pretty solid.
And the crowd's getting louder. Again, could you tell?
Yeah, again, I could tell I was doing well. And because I then had that information, I was in third place. I was like, okay, cool. But I assumed that other people would just overtake me because the DD would eventually pay dividends, right? Yeah. And as I say, my aim would, like, the start felt just average. Didn't feel particularly great. I just got really good hands on it. And the judges went with me because mm-hmm. I'd been diving well. And then the cramp was getting stronger. I remember literally...
It's a damn Subway sandwich.
Probably. And I remember literally like telling myself to just not try too hard on my hurdle.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want it to cramp up.
Yeah.
So for my reverse, my next dive, I literally felt like I was so lazy on my hurdle and in my shape. I literally didn't even feel like I was pointing my toes. But again, just got decent hands.
You got a real good hand.
Went with me like 7.5, 8, 8.5 maybe on that. And then the same thing on front as well. I was like, just don't try on the hurdle because I didn't want my calves to cramp up any worse than they were.
And you finished with front.
Yeah, I finished on front pike. And I, again, felt super lazy in my hurdle. Felt super lazy in the shape. Sick hands. Probably went 8.5, 9.
Everybody was losing their minds at that point. We're losing our minds because we're like, oh my God, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. It's going to happen. Well,
I was like, sick. I put a full list together. That's incredible. Came out, looked at the scoreboard, see 4.5, 9. I was like, what? And seen, again, I was early on, right? So went into first place.
Yeah.
But then stood at the side just watching diver after diver and not overtake me. I was like, okay, this is bad. My shock was the score. My shock wasn't the position. My shock was the score because I was like, oh my God, 4.5, 9, that's huge for me.
With a pike list?
Because I broke my PB in the morning and I broke it again by 32 points.
Yeah.
No. 32 points.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, my brain went mad. yeah, 32 points. And I was like, wow, that's insane. You know, 4.5, 9, that's huge. And then people just didn't overtake me. And, you know, all of a sudden I was a world silver medalist.
Yeah. We were losing our minds in the crowd. We're like, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's going to do it. Every dive, it just got louder and louder and louder. Ah! I had no voice. I was screaming. It was nuts.
And then what was crazy, like the next day, was hearing the stories of people. Obviously, you know, I got the first-hand information from people in the crowd, like yourself. But then hearing about people in the hotel at the time, they were probably at dinner. everyone watching on their phone.
Yeah.
But everyone streams at a different time. And people are actually telling me, like, people are losing their mind one time, and then a couple moments later, when they've seen it, they're losing their mind. All for me, all for my dives. And that was crazy to hear.
Yeah.
Because that really showed me, like, how much people appreciated me and what I've done in my career.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just been such an unusual pathway for an unusual athlete in diving.
But I think it's not just your career. It's not just your diving. It's also how you carry yourself.
Yeah.
And it's who you are and what you do on the pool deck. And I think that goes a lot longer. I mean, yeah, people aren't going to remember you always for your diving.
Yeah.
They're going to remember you for how they made you feel.
Yeah.
Or how you made them feel. That is what's going to stick in people's memory, and that goes a long way.
And actually, what's been incredible is this week, obviously, I've got my knee injury, so I haven't been able to compete. But, you know, this week, so many people have been telling me, you're such an amazing diver. And people don't normally say that, I think, when you're in it. Or maybe they do, but it doesn't register because you're still locked in and you're thinking about other things. But so many people telling me that this week was, like, really cool to hear.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me about your knee. What happened? You've got this gnarly scar.
Yeah, big scar from surgery. It was in December. I was competing at Scottish Nationals. It was my last event of the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting ready for the final. I had a good prelim. I think I was leading after the prelim, so I was hoping to kind of carry it through and improve my score for the final.
Mm-hmm.
I literally got in training session, 10-minute bounce before the event starts, and I was hoping to, like, get a front 4.5 off, because I didn't use it in the prelim. I was going to use it in the final, so I was trying to get a front off, I was trying to get a reverse off, and maybe my first dive. So I did, like, a hurdle front 1/2 tuck, and then I was going to go back up and just going straight onto front 4.5. I felt fine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Done that dive enough now to be confident on it. And the funny thing is, like, I had that little bit of extra adrenaline. The boards had just been serviced, so they were moving nice. I think we had relatively new boards, mm-hmm. and I got the perfect board rhythm on my hurdle. I actually caught it so sweet. And I remember coming down on the board, I was like, oh my God, this is gonna be sick. And then all of a sudden, legs gone, buckled, and like my body stayed upright the whole time, and I was just forward into the water. So the board would have come back up and just pinged my feet under my whole body. Uh-huh. So it caused like rapid flexion. Obviously under the water, like, it was painful, a bit sore.
Yeah.
Felt unusual, of course, so swam to the side.
Immediately grabbing your knee?
I can't remember, actually, but I pulled myself out of the water, you know, got myself up onto the side, but, like, couldn't lift my leg out of the water.
You couldn't lift it?
No, because...
Like, straighten your leg?
Didn't really know what to do with it, but I couldn't lift it out, so I, like, had to use my hand to... Like, I kind of sat there with my leg and, like, my body on the side, and it's a raised pool side as well.
Yeah.
So, like, sat on the side, my leg just hanging in the water. I was like, okay, this feels weird. And then, like, went to lift my leg out. I was just, like, trying to see
what I was feeling.
I was like, this feels obviously really strange. And then you could see, like, the quad muscle kind of, like, retracted. So, like, this feels weird, like, super uncomfortable. I thought it was just, like, a major quad strain. I thought my leg had just, like, panicked so much in that situation that it just, like, frozen. So I was like, right, just let me breathe a minute. Eventually got myself up and walked to the back, like, almost buckling on my leg, because as I found out, I had no tendon supporting me.
Yeah.
And then was, like, laid at the back on the raised tiles for a while. You know, people brought some ice, but that wasn't really doing anything. I was kind of there with my leg bent. I was like, well, I think my leg was straight at the time. Yeah, my leg was locked out straight. I was like, I really want to bend it, but I can't. But this feels so uncomfortable. So I thought it might just take 10 minutes and it'll ease off.
Yeah.
But then obviously it never did. So went down to the hospital. They diagnosed some kind of tear in the tendon, partial or full potentially, in the rectus femoris tendon.
Rectus femoris, that's your...
That's the main quad muscle.
So it's your main quad muscle then attaches to your knee?
Via a tendon.
Okay, and that's the tendon you tore.
So I tore the tendon, yeah. And this is, like I say, the main one. So the only benefit is the fact that I've actually been using my quads correctly, because that's the main quad muscle that you're supposed to use. So use my legs properly.
Okay, good.
So they diagnosed a tear. So a couple of days later, you know, I got put in a splint, on crutches. I was able to move around quite well. I was able to fully weight bear, which was good. Obviously a bit challenging going upstairs, up and downstairs, a bit challenging showering, things like that, just making sure to not bend my knee.
Yeah.
Got an ultrasound a couple of days later. They scanned it and they found that they thought it was a 50% tear. And they said that the tendon had retracted by 2.5 centimeters.
Okay.
So that's
why it had, your quad had moved up?
Exactly. So I spoke to a surgeon. I was able to get in for surgery the next day, which is super lucky through the NHS.
That's three days after doing it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So fast for the NHS. So super grateful for that. Got the surgery done. After the surgery, they told me that it was actually an 80% tear.
Jeez.
Of the tendon, so it was hanging on for dear life. But the surgery went well. I was in a brace restricted to 30 degrees of flexion, so probably about this much for 2 months.
But you could fully walk? You were allowed to
fully
walk?
Fully weight bear, yep. So I started off using 2 crutches, then went to 1 pretty quickly, then went to none pretty quickly.
Okay.
Obviously, just super awkward to move with only 30 degrees flexion.
Yeah.
Had to sleep in the brace and everything because, like, you know, obviously when sleeping, that's main recovery time as well. And I had to maintain in that position because in that range, that's where the scar tissue is going to form its best and make it its strongest.
Mm-hmm.
And for 2 months, that's how long it needed to form the scar tissue well enough to make sure that the tendon is at minimal risk of re-rupturing.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, once I get back to the very intense work that I'm doing. So,
how's it feel now?
I mean, yeah, it's
you're two,
still
was
super
it
tight.
2 months, three, almost 3 months out.
Yeah, so next Wednesday, Wednesday the 1st of March will be 3 months since the surgery. The surgeon said it'll take between 4 and 6 months for a tendon to heal back to its full strength.
Okay.
But I've been working super hard on rehab. Flexion wise, you know, almost into a tuck shape. I can feel a bit of a pull at this point now, but I don't know if that's even in the scar itself, because that tissue is going to be really tight. So I'm working on that.
That's so painful to work on.
Yeah.
I hated doing that.
Yeah. Obviously got to rebuild the quad muscle because that just shrunk like nothing, like a little raisin. So you can see compared to the other one.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a huge difference, but it's improved so much. So.
But that's not your hurdle leg, correct?
No, this one's my hurdle leg. This is the one that I drive off. So that's really good. Anytime I'm going to be pushing through this one, it's going to be both together.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just working hard on my rehab every day, doing as much as I can, but also not too much.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I'm surrounded by great people. You know, I've got good coaches, strength and conditioning coach. I've got a physio who are advising me on what to do. And, you know, it's moving in the right direction. I'm hopeful that it'll get back to a strong enough level where I'll be able to dive, you know, and hopefully get back to almost a full list.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm aiming to be ready for Worlds in July because...
Fukuoka.
I still think I can qualify my spot at the first attempt.
Yeah.
I still think I'm good enough to make a top 12 as long as my leg is strong enough to push me through.
Okay. What list do you want to do? Who knows yet?
Fine with the pike list, honestly. If that's what it takes, I'm fine with that.
Just do whatever it takes.
Anything else is a bonus.
Yeah.
But if I can get back to a pike list... bring back 2016 vibes.
Okay.
For sure.
And maybe a synchro partner.
Well, that's a secondary goal. So, you know, my outlook going forward in terms of my diving is if I can qualify at the first attempt for the Olympics, that'd be amazing because at the second opportunity, I can put pure focus on synchro and see if we can do something.
So if you can get that now and then focus on synchro and get both then.
But I'm confident I can get my spot at either one. And synchro is super competitive.
It's hard.
Really competitive, but it's simply going to come down to who performs on the day. So, you know, I've been working with Johan for the last 6 months or so in Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. He's come to join me. And
he's from where?
He's from Calgary,
okay.
Canada. He spent 4 years at Northwestern University in Chicago, graduated in neuroscience. Hopefully he's going to apply for med school, but he's put his medical career on hold to try and make it to the Olympics.
The first Jamaican synchro team.
Yeah, hopefully so. You know, we're gonna
that'd be so cool,
go
man.
Go to the Pan American Games, hopefully.
Yeah.
And compete there, and yeah, if we can make it to the Olympics, that'd be phenomenal. That'd be absolutely phenomenal. So, that's the goal in my diving, and then after that, it's all about trying to leave a legacy.
Yep. And what's that look like?
Just get diving started in Jamaica. Try and find some local Jamaican divers, and you know, have something running out there. Give the opportunity in the sport that I had to mm-hmm. local Jamaican kids.
Okay.
Because the talent could be there. It's just got to be discovered. So
That would be the first, you know, like truly team of Jamaican divers.
Yep.
Besides yourself. I mean, you are a team, but you are one right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
You were the first Jamaican diver?
First male Jamaican diver to go to the Olympics. There was divers in the past. They had the Commonwealth Games in Jamaica in 1966. So we had a few divers there. I had one female diver called Betsy Sharp now, I think, who went to the Munich Games. Mm-hmm. She was like 16 years old. I think the 66 Games in Jamaica, the Commonwealth, she was 10. And she competed, which is crazy. I fortunately got to meet her just before Rio.
Oh, that's cool.
Because she lives in Florida, so yeah. She came across to my training camp in Tallahassee.
Okay.
That was really, really cool. She sent me some pictures, and that was really class. But yeah, it would be cool to have a local team that is sustainable as well.
Yeah.
So, I want to see if I can make something happen.
And you'll be that coach?
I don't know. I don't know if coaching is for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's where my ability is best
mm-hmm.
suited. But you know, definitely initially, I'll be there to try and support it. I think it'll be important to have an experienced coach, someone who knows how to build a program.
Yeah.
Come and do it, because if I was just thrown in there on my own, I'd have no idea what I was doing.
Yeah. Because it's too. I mean, you can be a diver for 20 years, but yeah. Going into coaching is
you don't know how to build a program. Like, being a diver for 20 years doesn't show you how to build a program.
No, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there needs to be someone who has some experience, hopefully, in that. And if I can offer my advice along the way, or the connections, or the
infrastructure, or whatever it may be,
then that's maybe where my my place is going to be best suited. So
cool.
We'll see, but. I got a job to do first, man. I got to make it to Paris.
Paris is the plan, the goal.
Mm-hmm.
It'll happen. It'll happen. You'll get back.
Failure's not an option.
Anything else you want to add?
No, man.
Cool.
Thanks for the time.
Thanks, man.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure with you.